Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is Wednesday. It's July the 20th, 2022, and so happy to be talking to you once again. It's Cale Clark, and you can reach me right now. 1-888-914-9149 is the studio line to call. 888-914-9149. And of course, you can also email the show. Great place to send questions. I'll try to answer them here or on the Faith Explained program. We're going to be opening up a new segment very soon on the Faith Explained show, answering your faith-based questions. And you can send those emails to Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And if you want to send it specifically for the Faith Explained program, it's faith at relevantradio.com, but I'll eventually catch wind of it either way. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Well, today's episode I've decided to call The Call of a Lifetime. And it's true on many, many levels. We're going to be talking about the call of the prophet Jeremiah. It was the first reading today at Mass. One of my favorite passages in all of Scripture. And it really has a lot to say to God's call to us today. He's constantly calling us every moment. But we tend to make excuses, all right? So we really have no excuses in answering God's call. So we'll talk about that. And speaking of calls, we're going to be talking about the call of a lifetime that Joe Davis got when he got the call from Fox Sports to call not only the World Series, but also the All-Star Game, which he did last night for Fox. He's also the play-by-play broadcaster for the LA Dodgers. Filled some pretty big shoes, those of Vin Scully. And Vin Scully's a Catholic. He's done rosary recitations on video. I've seen it. I've heard it. Hey, if you want to pray the rosary with Vin Scully, it doesn't get much better than that. So we'll have Joe Davis' story and some info from the game from last night. Maybe some of you guys were at the game. We know we have a lot of listeners out in L.A., and we're so grateful that we are the number one Catholic program in this time slot in L.A., and we're so thankful for that. Maybe you were at the game. Maybe you want to give me your take on how Joe's doing. I think he's been doing pretty well, filling those big shoes. But he also has to fill the shoes of Joe Buck now, too. So you can call in, give me your opinion on that, 888-914-9149. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that it was 2 years ago today that I got the call. And I started working with Relevant Radio on this day 2 years ago. I can't believe 24 months have gone by so quickly. It was July the 20th, 2020, that we had our very first episodes of the Faith Explained show and the Cale Clark show right here on Relevant Radio. And my thanks to Father Rocky, who called me, also sent me a nice note, a happy anniversary note today. So appreciate that, Father, and thank you for that call. Thank you for trusting me, and thanks to all my teammates over these last couple years. Producer Jim, producer Lucas Holt. Lucas messaged me today. Yeah, it's been a great day, and I actually had kind of forgotten about it. To be honest with you, I didn't even know until Lucas texted me. I was like, oh yeah, it was July the 20th. So what a ride it's been, and I hope it continues for many, many years. And you guys have been a big, big part of it. And once again, you can call in 888-914-9149. Well, let me take a look at the call of Jeremiah. When I heard this at Mass this morning, I knew I had to talk about it because it's just an incredible passage for so many reasons. And we are really, really good at making excuses why we can't do things in life. You know, whether it's, and I hear this all the time from, even from my own daughter, I can't. Yeah, you can. You can. You need to try. I don't know how. I don't understand. I don't have the right equipment. I've got a doctor's appointment. I've got relatives coming over this summer. There are a million reasons why we say we can't do something. But it's also true in the Catholic life as well. Sometimes we don't want to fulfill God's call for us. And sometimes there's still a hefty amount of clericalism in the church, let's face it. And a lot of people want to kind of look at the priests and bishops of the church and say, well, it's their job. It's their job. No, it's actually, well, they have a job to do, no question about it. But I always kind of say that the job of the clergy is through their teaching, through dispensing the sacraments, through the formation that they give us there. They help us to be sanctified so that we as lay people could go out and sanctify the world and bring Christ to the world. Because you can't bring Father Rocky with you to your office cubicle. You know, you're the person that God has placed there to reach those people around you and on your street and among the people that you hang out with. So don't forget that all of us are called by virtue of our baptism to that threefold office of Christ, right? Where he is priest, prophet, and king. Now we share in the priesthood of Christ in a different way, not in the ministerial priesthood, someone like Father Rocky would, but we do share in the general priesthood of Christ, the priesthood of all believers, quote unquote, if you will. And it's very similar to ancient Israel, because in ancient Israel there was that tribe known as the Levites who had the priestly duties, but the whole people of God were called collectively a priesthood and a holy nation. So we've got to do that. So we've got to be priests, we've got to be prophets, and a prophet is somebody who speaks God's truth to the world, not just a fortune teller, somebody who predicts the future, but speaking God's truth to the world. And then, of course, we get to share in the reign of Christ and the kingdom of Christ. And the church is kind of the kingdom of God in seed form, but everything is going to become obedient to Christ in time. Everything and everyone is going to happen. And so, as St. Paul says, we suffer with him, we will also reign with him. And so we're called to those three offices of Christ to share in them. But if you really want to boil it down to two things, the two things that we're called to by virtue of our baptism are, number one, holiness, and number two, apostolate, and that's sharing our faith. So it's becoming a saint, holiness, and it's also helping other people become saints. That's evangelism or apostolate, whatever you want to call it, sharing your faith. But again, excuses always pop up. People say, well, I'm not really gifted for that. Maybe somebody else can do it. I'm too busy. I'm too old. I'm too young. That's what Jeremiah said. I'm too young. Well, Ben Franklin, the amazing Ben Franklin, was so instrumental in the early formation of the United States. He once wrote this. He said, "He that is good for making excuses is seldom good for anything else." So let's try to get rid of the excuses. And again, we're in good company here, because Jeremiah had a ton of excuses why he couldn't fulfill God's word. St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, he once said this, and this is in his spiritual classic, The Way. The Way. It just has so many good points. It's hard to even get out of the first chapter, because the first chapter is on character. And he says this in point 23. He says, "You say you can't do more. Couldn't it be that you can't do less?" He goes on to say about this idea of making excuses. He says this. Let me just find it here. I can't find it. I'll find it later. But he gives a lot on making excuses. And he basically says, just get rid of those excuses. Get rid of them. Get rid of them. There's a lot of excuses that we pile up all the time to try to evade not only our duties, but the call of God on our lives, what he wants us to do specifically. So this is exactly what Jeremiah was struggling with as well. So I'm gonna just read to you a few verses from Jeremiah chapter 1. And this is, again, the first reading. It doesn't give all the chapter, but I'm going to add a couple points that I think are really, really important. And starting with verse 4 of Jeremiah chapter 1, it's a great passage to meditate on. It says, "Now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations." Now, what's interesting about this is that, you know, on an episode that we did a couple of days ago, I talked about the top 10 Bible verses to know when you're lonely, when you're struggling with loneliness. And I talked about Psalm 139, which is also a great pro-life psalm. It talks about how God knit us together in our mother's wombs. And something very similar here is in Jeremiah chapter 1. I didn't use this as one of my chapters or verses, but I easily could have. "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations. Now, this concept of knowing, like when God says, I knew you, he didn't just know information about us. He had a specific plan for what he wanted us to do. There are people that he wanted us to reach. There's a specific plan. This is what's called the particular will of God. There's the general will of God, right? The Ten Commandments. This is how we're to live. But there's also the particular will of God, or specific vocation. For example, if you're called to marriage, well, that's a vocation, but it's got to be more specified. Who am I called to marry? And so there's always a specification, a call within a call. Just like Mother Teresa had a call within a call. She knew she was called to be a nun, but then on that train, remember, she got that special call within a call from Christ, had this big mystical experience, and she knew that she had to found the Missionaries of Charity. And so I'm going to talk about her again in a second, but anyways, let's continue on with Jeremiah chapter 1. God says, I appointed you a prophet to the nations. But then Jeremiah says, ah, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak, for I am only a youth. But the Lord said to me, do not say I am only a youth, for to all to whom I send you, you shall go, and whatever I command you, you shall speak. Be not afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, says the Lord. Then the Lord put forth his hand and touched my mouth. And the Lord said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have set you this day over nations and over kingdoms to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. Now, that's where the reading kind of cuts off. If you went to Mass today and you heard that reading, that's kind of where it cut off. But I want to just read some more verses to you because this is really important. It goes on to say, and then the word of the Lord came to me saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? And I said, I see a rod of almond. Then the Lord said to me, you have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it. The word of the Lord came to me a second time, saying, what do you see? And I said, I see a boiling pot facing away from the north. Then the Lord said to me, out of the north evil shall break forth upon all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I am calling all the tribes of the kingdoms of the north, said the Lord, and they shall come, and every one shall set his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem, against all its walls round about, and against all the cities of Judah. And I will utter my judgments against them for all their wickedness in forsaking me. They have burned incense to other gods and worshipped the works of their own hands. Now, what was that vision all about? This boiling pot kind of tipping away from the north. Where would it be tipping to? It would be tipping towards the south. And the southern part of the kingdom known as Judah, that's where Jerusalem was. And so this idea is that there's going to be an attack coming from the north. And that's exactly what happened. God says people will try to set up their thrones at the entrance of Judah and the gates of Jerusalem. That's really a prophecy about how the Babylonians were going to invade the Holy Land. And that's exactly what happened in 586 BC. They destroyed the temple and Jeremiah hid the Ark of the Covenant. And we don't know exactly where he hid it. It was never found, despite the great efforts of Harrison Ford. But anyways, that's what that image really means. And then just the last part here, God says to Jeremiah, but you gird up your loins, arise and say to them everything that I command you. Do not be dismayed by them, lest I dismay you before them. And in one way, I've seen that translated as, do not break down before them, or I will break you down before them. God says, and I behold, I make you this day a fortified city, an iron pillar and bronze walls against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, its princes, its priests, and the people of the land. They will fight against you, but they shall not prevail against you. For I am with you, says the Lord, to deliver you. So that's just a really inspiring passage about the initial call of Jeremiah. And I think it really does speak to us and the excuses that we try to make. Now, one thing about Jeremiah was called to be a prophet, but his father and his grandfather were both priests. And so they have a bit of a different job, right? I mean, obviously a priest kind of has duties. He's got to offer sacrifices in the temple in the old covenant time. And he's kind of on the set schedule. Not so much for the prophets, because it was a totally unpredictable lifestyle. God is going to call him to go to certain places, to speak to certain people. And he's going to put his words in his mouth. He can't even really pre-plan everything he's going to say. But being a prophet, like I said before, it's not just about telling the future, although that was obviously part of the role of prophecy in the Bible. But it's a prophet really is someone who speaks the truth of God to the world. So we all have to do that, not only in our words, but also in our deeds. So we're not just foretellers, we're forthtellers. We bring forth the truth of God, and we want to call people back to God. So it's a totally different ballgame from being a priest. And oftentimes, the trouble with the prophets was that people didn't want to hear their message. And Jesus lamented this often. He talked about this in the gospel. He talked about how Jerusalem always rejected the prophets and built their tombs. And the same fate that befell those prophets obviously befell the Lord too. And he said, hey, I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to get crucified because it's not possible that a prophet should perish outside of Jerusalem. And remember, Peter is like, no, this isn't going to happen to you. Well, no, it is. And this is, in fact, God's will. So this is what the prophets had to do. And sometimes the priests needed to hear the call of the prophets, because sometimes the priests went offline, and this is one of the things that Jesus was really upset about. The prophets kind of had to, in some ways, live by their wits, live by God's providence, the kindness, the generosity of others. The priests had sort of a salary, if you will, that came out of the sacrifices of the people, some of the offerings that were given to the temple. Like if somebody offered a bull or a cow, a calf, well, what happened to the leftover meat? They would often have a barbecue with it. I'm being a bit funny here, and I'm trying and not really succeeding, but I'm telling you that this is a reality. And I saw this in real life with my own eyes. When I was in Jerusalem, I was working on an archaeological dig just outside the old city walls of Jerusalem. If you've been there before, it just steps away from the Church of the Dormition, which is the traditional Catholic site where Mary was assumed into heaven at the end of her life. It's not far from there. And what we found on our archaeological dig, which was directed by the world-famous archaeologist Shimon Gibson, was a high priestly mansion from the time of Jesus. Now, what was quite shocking was that it sort of backed up everything that Jesus was upset about. He was upset about the avariciousness of the priestly rulers of Jerusalem, who are all Sadducees, by the way. Well, they were too sad at the time, because what we found in this high priestly mansion that we dug up was these guys had their own bathtubs. Nobody had their own bathtubs back then. They were really living high on the hog. This is wild stuff. And they were taking the meat from the sacrifices, putting it in the freezer, having great feasts, and having a wonderful time. Meanwhile, the people who were really suffering were going without. The widow's mite. Remember that parable? It was not a parable, but Jesus kind of uses this to make a point. There is the widow who at her offering two small copper coins. That was literally enough money to buy her last meal, enough money to buy enough flour to make one muffin cake. And Jesus says she's really put in more than all the others. She's literally given her last meal. But he said this in the context of this should not be happening, because the rulers of the people were supposed to be looking after the weak and the vulnerable like this woman, but they weren't. They're only looking after themselves. So this is an example of how these guys needed to hear the call of the prophets as well. But Jeremiah didn't really want to hear it. But God told him, look, I chose you for this. You might not think you're up to the task, but you were made for this moment. That's why he said, I chose you before I formed you in the womb. I set you apart before you were born. Our future belongs to God. And ultimately, we do make our plans. We have to do that. But we always say, thy will be done. And ultimately, it is the will of the Lord that prevails. Many are the plans. I think it's the book of Proverbs that says this. Many are the plans in the mind of a person, but it is the will of the Lord that prevails. And so, again, the excuses can pile up again and again. Jeremiah's excuse, one of his excuses was, I'm too young. I'm too young. Oh, Lord God, look, I don't know how to speak. I'm only a youth. By the way, Moses said the exact same thing. If you look this up in Exodus chapter 4, there's this big, long conversation between Moses and God. And Moses is like, I'm not eloquent. I don't know what to say. My brother Aaron is much more of a great speaker. Maybe you should use him instead. And God's like, listen, I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to actually send both of you. But don't worry. I'm going to tell you exactly what to say and how to say it. So the bottom line is that we can engage in a lot of what St. Jose Maria called in another place. He called it mystical wishful thinking. And some people say, well, what if I was older? Then I would be able to serve God better, if I had more experience. And some people say, well, what if I was younger? I'm falling apart here. I wish I was 20 years younger. What if I was married? What if I wasn't married? He says, get rid of all these thoughts. This is what's called mystical wishful thinking. The reality is that God is calling you right now in your present situation. And stop making excuses. We can all have them. We've all got a lot of them. But the bottom line is that it's God who's going to use us, just like he used Jeremiah. And this is what he says to him in verse 9. It says, then the Lord reached out his hand, touched my mouth, and told me, I have now filled your mouth with my words. So the words are going to come from God. He's going to give us what to say. Like the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 6. He has this vision of the throne room of God. The cherubim takes a hot coal from the altar before God's throne and touches his mouth with it. And he says, send me. You know, I'm gonna do it with your words. And sometimes God uses people that, humanly speaking, don't seem to have the goods, but that's okay, because very, very often those people need to rely more on God's power. St. Paul was mocked for being short, for being bald. In fact, the word Paul means small. He knew a lot of rhetoric, but he didn't always seem so eloquent in front of the people. There are other preachers that people thought were more impressive, but Paul's like, listen, I'm an apostle here, and my words are coming from God. Mother Teresa, I mentioned her earlier. Who would have thought that a tiny, wrinkled little Albanian nun would be the one to move so many hearts all around the world? And she always called herself just a pencil in the hand of God. And so it doesn't matter if you're old, young, good-looking, not, according to the world standards, God has a plan for you. He's going to use you. Jeremiah was maybe 20 or 25 years old when this happened, by the way. He felt maybe a little inexperienced, maybe a little bit intimidated, but he had the trump card, which was God himself. He says, I'm always going to be with you. I will be with you. So that's the big promise here. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous. There's the threat of rejection. And very often we will be rejected. Jesus was rejected. Jesus says, don't think that you're going to be treated any better than me. But the victory ultimately is his. And so we've got to do this. Don't delay. Delayed obedience is disobedience. I say this to my daughter all the time. Don't be intimidated. Be firm in the faith. Understand that you've got to take a stand. If you don't take a stand for the gospel, you're going to fall for anything. God says to Jeremiah, do not be cowed by them. Do not be intimidated by them, or I will cause you to cower before them. So, whew, that's a bit of a warning there by God. So be strong. You can do it. You can do it. And lots of good will come from it when we obey God's call in our lives and go to the people that he's sending us to. And 9 times out of 10, he's not going to call you overseas. He might, but he's probably going to call you. I know he's going to call you to reach the people around you, your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers. That's your mission field. And make the most of it. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Stick around. We got lots of fun stuff coming up next. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hey, we're back on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And I got to tell you, last night marked to me and to many, many of you as well, no doubt, the official midpoint of summer. The Midsummer Classic took place last night. the MLB All-Star Game at Dodger Stadium in Chavez Ravine in Los Angeles. And on the call for Fox Sports was a guy who was filling the shoes of not just one legend, but producer Jim might want to dispute me on this, maybe another legend. I'll tell you who those two guys are later, but the guy on the call was Joe Davis, calling the game alongside John Smoltz, former Major League pitcher on Fox. Here's a clip from last night's All-Star Game.
Off we go. First pitch swinging. Flare of a base hit into center. Otani even told him through Tom Verducci, first pitch swing, and he did, and he broke his bat, but he's got a base hit. All right, Aaron Judge, there's a lot of good stuff on this guy. 33 home runs to lead baseball. Otani aboard with a leadoff hit. Kershaw to Judge. After a toss over, he picked him off! Kershaw erases Otani. And now Kershaw comes back home, and Judge strikes out swinging on a filthy slider from Kershaw. Two gone. Here comes Kershaw. Ground ball to short. Trey Turner goes the short way and ends the inning. Scoreless first inning for Clayton Kershaw. Off and rolling in this All-Star game.
So that was Joe Davis on the call for Fox last night, the All-Star game in Los Angeles. And by the way, believe it or not, that was the first All-Star game he's ever been to, and he's calling the game. How about that? And there weren't too many offensive fireworks in that game. It was basically dominated by the pitchers. American League won their ninth All-Star game in a row. Giancarlo Stanton, who was named MVP of the game from the Yankees, he hit a two-run shot, and he grew up in the L.A. area, actually, Giancarlo Stanton, and he went to Notre Dame High School, and he used to sit out in the very bleachers in Dodger Stadium where he hit his mammoth two-run shot, and that was followed up. Back-to-back home runs, Byron Buxton from the Minnesota Twins hit a solo homer. The American League did win 3-2, but not before this happened. Producer Jim, who's a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan, is forcing me to play this for you as well. This was earlier in the game.
That ball is crushed to left center field. Paul Goldschmidt hits it out. 2-0 National League. And so his monster season doesn't take a break here at the All-Star game. It's 2-0 NL.
Yep. The National League did have the lead there for a little bit. Paul Goldschmidt might be the MVP of the National League from the St. Louis Cardinals, from Jim's St. Louis Cardinals. Hey, you know who else was there? Another favorite son of St. Louis, John Hamm, was at the game. He's always kicking around these things from Top Gun Maverick. Anyways, so I had to play that one for producer Jim. But anyways, so Joe Davis has really his dream job, and he talked about in an interview what happened the day he got the call from Fox Sports. Now, like I said, he had already jumped in filling the shoes as a Dodgers broadcaster, Dodgers TV broadcaster for Vin Scully, maybe the greatest baseball play-by-play man of all time. I think most people probably say that. He called Dodgers games for 67 years. That is a full lifetime. He retired in 2016. And Joe Davis had kind of taken over the duties on the road games for a little while before taking over full-time. But earlier this year, there were some rumblings that the announcing team of Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, and obviously Joe Buck used to do football and baseball for Fox Sports. He's called 24 Worlds in a row. Unbelievable. And, of course, he was on Fox's big Sunday afternoon football package, their primetime game with Troy Aikman. Well, there was a lot of rumors in the broadcasting world that Buck and Aikman were going to go to ESPN and going to be the new Monday Night Football crew, and that is exactly what happened. So Joe Davis really had his ear to the ground. He was really raising his eyebrows at this news because he knew that he might have a shot at his dream job, that Fox might also call him and say, hey, if Joe Buck leaves, would you consider calling the World Series for Fox and the All-Star game? Well, here's how the call came to Joe Davis. Check this out.
When did you get that news? How did you get the news? In that moment, is it like bring you back to your childhood?
So I kind of, like everybody else, just saw the rumors coming out that there was a chance that ESPN was going to go after Joe Buck, and my ears perked up immediately. But it was one of those things where it's like, okay, I'll believe that when I see it. And I was actually in Las Vegas doing the Pac-12 basketball tournament, and my boss at Fox flew into Las Vegas and sat down with me, and He said, I'm here to offer you a chance to be the voice of baseball. And I lost it. I lost it like a woman being proposed to, I guess. I kind of
the ugly cry, the whole thing.
Well, it was not great. It was not great. But yeah, obviously a dream come true.
Well, bring us back to your childhood and when you thought about becoming a broadcaster. What made you want to do that? And sort of, was this the dream?
Yeah, honestly, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, had you asked me then, what do you want to do when you grow up? I would have told you, I want to announce the World Series. So I was lucky that I had that foresight. And from the time that I started thinking about what do I want to be when I grow up, as soon as you start having those thoughts, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. And I think it's okay if you don't have any idea what you want to do, but certainly helps if you can figure it out early. So it kind of guided my decision-making on, you know, how I picked a school and what I did while I was in school, and definitely set me ahead of the curve knowing that, knowing it's exactly what I wanted to do at a really early age.
I think that's great life advice there from Joe Davis that, I mean, it's not all of us know exactly what we want to do when we're kids, but if you do find out at a young age what you want to pursue as your vocation, your work vocation, that is, it helps you to plan. It certainly is a lot easier in planning. You kind of figure out where you're going to go to school and what you're going to do. And so that was kind of his dream. Now, he came at it in a bit of a different way than the guy he's replacing, Joe Buck. And most of you know that Joe Buck was really kind of, that was kind of the family business for him, because his father, Jack Buck, was a Hall of Fame broadcaster. He was the voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. And I know producer Jim is a huge fan of Jack Buck. I don't think he likes Joe as much, but it's funny, like these guys, people have opinions on whether they like Joe Davis, Joe Buck, as announcers. They kind of run the gamut. Like on Twitter last night, some people loved the call of the All-Star Game. Some people didn't like the way Joe was handling it. So again, back to San Jose Maria, one of the things he said was, you're not a dollar bill to be loved by everyone. If you find a dollar bill on the ground, you're going to be happy no matter what. But we all have personalities. There are people that we are naturally drawn to and people that kind of turn us off. And that's the way it kind of has to be in a certain sense. And great definition of preaching I once heard, and this is true for all of us because we all have to preach the gospel, is it's truth poured through personality. I love that. Truth poured through personality. And so you're going to be able to reach some people with the gospel that others will not be able to, and you won't be able to reach some people, but that's okay because God has other ways to get to them. And so don't let that ever bother you. Just be yourself. And that's one thing that Joe Davis has always tried to do. And so in 1996, when he was really young, and even to this day, he's gotten this big broadcasting gig. He's only 34 years old. But back in 1996, Joe Davis as a kid heard Gary Thorne on ESPN calling the Stanley Cup Finals, and he just really loved it. By the way, that was also the first year that Joe Buck called the World Series. And it just really inspired him. There's a really, really good profile, by the way, in the New York Times, if you saw this just a couple of days ago, by Tyler Kepner. It was called Meet the New Voice of Baseball. It was a nice profile of Joe Davis. And it just kind of gave some of his backstory and talked about how Fox Sports executive Brad Zager, who actually gave him that call where Joe Davis had the ugly cry. He was like a woman being proposed to. Would you like to call the World Series? Yes, of course I will. And Brad Zager actually became aware of Joe Davis years ago when he was in his early 20s. Back in 2012, he was hired by ESPN. He was only 24 at the time. He had been calling minor league baseball for a couple years when he was, you know, starting at the age of 19. And he was just beyond his years. A lot of broadcasters, and you probably know this if you're a sports fan, they can kind of talk too much. If they're a young broadcaster, they can talk over the action. You've got to let the pictures tell the story to a certain point. And Joe Davis was really, really good at that at a young age. He didn't try to take over. He let the moment breathe. He was a real natural on that front. And so this kind of went back to his university days. One thing that was really cool about Joe Davis was that, again, this goes back to him wanting to do this ever since he was a kid, was that he had the opportunity to go to Harvard and play football there. His father was a high school football coach. He had the opportunity to go to Harvard, play football, go to Brown, another Ivy League school. There are a few other great schools that recruited him, but he chose to go to this school that I had never heard of before, and it was in Wisconsin, And what was the name of it? Oh, I'll find it. It's anyways, it was a small school in Wisconsin. And the reason why he picked that school was because the coach of the football team told him that as soon as the season's over, we'll let you be the play-by-play announcer for the basketball team. Because he knew right away he wasn't going to try to be a professional athlete. He wanted to simply be a broadcaster. So that's what he did. And hey, the rest is history. So this is really, really cool. And one of the interesting things is that a couple years ago, before this all happened to Joe Davis, he actually ran into Joe Buck. And Joe Buck gave him some interesting advice. And one of the things that Joe Buck said to Joe Davis was, always remember, if you get hit by a bus on your way to the game to call the game, they're not going to have a moment of silence for you. What does that mean? Well, basically, they're not there to listen to you. The fans are there to watch the game. And you can wear your best suit. You can be super prepared, and you should be. Have a nice tie. But at the end of the day, it's about the game. So take your job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. And the other thing he tried to say was that you don't try to cram too much in. Joe Buck said, don't try to cram 30 pounds of stuff into a 10-pound bag. You have to be your own best editor and your own harshest editor. And I think that's really good advice. Even for this show, the hardest things are what to cut. I mean, yesterday we did this show on zodiacs, pagan symbols found in synagogues. And I had all this extra information, but most of it wasn't probably going to be too useful to you. So I had to cut. I had to decide, what am I going to cut here? And so Joe Davis is really, really good at that. When he calls baseball games, he tells stories, kind of like what Vin Scully did. He was so good as a storyteller for the Dodgers. And how do you think he's doing? If you're out in L.A. and you've been following his career, are you happy as he's he can't really ever replace Vin Scully. Nobody could, but he's simply following him. He succeeded him as the voice of the Dodgers and now the World Series and the All-Star Game. Let's go to the phones now. Elsie is calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Elsie.
Hi, Kale. I just wanted to talk about Joe Davis a bit. I was at the All-Star Game yesterday, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to hear him call the game, but I do think he deserved it. He deserved to have his first All-Star Game call from Dodger Stadium, where he usually calls from. So I think if he deserves it. He's done great. I feel like he has exceeded our expectations as Dodger fans after Vin Scully left. So that's all I wanted to contribute to that.
Well, Elsie, thanks so much for the call. And what was it like being at the game last night? Was that your first All-Star game?
It was my first All-Star game. It was amazing. I am a sucker for flyovers, so I was so excited to see the flyover in person. And just so many different people or different fans from different teams. I've never seen those many fans from all over the place. It was really fun, and it was just an incredible feeling. I couldn't describe it, but definitely checked it off my bucket list. So I was pretty excited about that.
That's awesome. And obviously being at the game, you didn't hear the call, but you're happy with Joe Davis. You think he's a worthy successor to Vin Scully. And what do you like about him as an announcer?
I feel like he does what Vin Scully used to do really well, which was when big moments, he lets the crowd do the talking.
Mm.
And he just says a few words, and then the rest is the crowd cheering, and he knows when to let the crowd do the talking, and I feel like that's the best part. But he also has just the way he talks to anyone that's in the booth with him. Like, it could be, because right now I feel like there's different people in the booth with him. It's not always oral. Mm-hmm. So he knows how to get along with them and knows how to, like, just carry on a great conversation while you're watching the game and still calling a great game at the same time. So
yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
That is amazing. And speaking of what you said about Vin Scully, how he would let the game breathe and he wouldn't always feel the need to talk all the time. There's an anecdote about Vin Scully that was in the New York Times piece. And I remember watching this game as a kid. It was it's kind of indelibly etched in a lot of people's memories. Was game 6 of the 1986 World Series when Ray Knight, he scores on Bill Buckner's error. The ball goes between his legs at Shea Stadium. And Vin Scully was calling that game, calling the World Series that year. And I didn't realize this, but Vin Scully said nothing for more than 3 minutes when that happened. He just kind of let the crowd's reaction tell the tale. That seems like an eternity to not say anything for 3 minutes when you're broadcasting a game, but he did it. So, and he was the best. And he was also somebody who prayed the rosary, somebody who was deep into his faith, Vin Scully. And I don't know about Joe Davis. I don't know if he has a faith background or not, but I always found that was really impressive about Vin. And a lot of people don't know that he was a Catholic as well, Vin Scully. So, hey, Elsie, thank you so much for the call. Thanks for listening to the show, and call back anytime. That was a great anecdote.
Thank you.
All right. There's Elsie calling from Los Angeles. She was actually at the game. That was really cool. And by the way, I think they should bring back this tradition of the players wearing their actual team uniforms in the game. You know, the road team wears their road grays, but their actual uniforms. I don't like the all-star uniforms. It's too hard to tell.
Kale, I just have to jump in right here. And Patrick and I were discussing this earlier. It's such a beautiful thing to see every player wearing their own jersey.
Yeah. I think it's hard. I think it's probably hard for the broadcasters too to just make sure, because a lot of things are happening during the game that don't normally happen. It's usually a lot faster game because you know guys are swinging at almost every pitch and it just goes faster. But it's, I think one of the big reasons why they're doing that obviously is MLB wants to sell more jerseys. They want people to buy the official All-Star uniform jerseys and hats and all that stuff. So I don't see this coming to an end anytime soon, but it should. I really loved it during that stretch of years where all the players wore their own team uniform at the All-Star game. It's one of the things that made the All-Star game, I think, the best game, the best All-Star game in any sport, especially because there used to be real stakes. The winner of the game had home field advantage. That league's team had home field advantage in the World Series. They took that away. But anyways, it was still fun last night. I enjoyed the game, even though it was a pitcher's duel. And I hope you're enjoying the Cale Clark Show. When we come back on the other side of the break, I'm going to be telling you about a famous Catholic that you might not have known was a Catholic. He made a huge contribution to the world. Right after this, 888-914-9149.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the program. This is the 2-year anniversary show of the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And if you want to call in the line to talk to me for free, the number to call is 1-888-914-9149. So call in. We got a couple lines open right now if you want to hop in. Hey, I want to tell you, now we tend to talk about faith, facts, and fun. We did some fun stuff already. We talked about the All-Star game last night. And we talked about Joe Davis, how he really got the call of a lifetime to call the All-Star game in the World Series starting from this year and going forward. He's so young, he's probably going to have a great long career, God willing, in the booth. And being in the broadcasting industry myself, I just always find this intriguing, how people prepare for what they do and how they execute on the air. It's just, I admire these guys big time. And here's a fact, and here's a faith-based fact. And we know this. There have been so many Catholics over the centuries who were great scientists, who were great scholars, and just generally smart guys. And smart gals as well. Think about Father Gregor Mendel, the father of modern genetics. A lot of people don't know that. He was a Catholic priest. Think about Father Georges Lemaître. We've talked about him a lot in recent days, who was the initiator of the Big Bang theory of cosmology the expansion of the universe, all that stuff. And there have been so many great ones like that through the years. And one that I didn't really know was Catholic, but I just read about him the other day on a little blog post from the Catholic Company about Louis Braille. Now, we all know about Braille. Braille is obviously a system for people to read who are visually impaired, and it uses raised bumps on paper, different combinations of those bumps to form letters, the 26 letters of our alphabet. And he was the guy who came up with that. And he used a tool that a lot of workers have used throughout the centuries called an awl in order to make his first set of Braille alphabet letters. But you wouldn't have blamed him for wanting to stay away from this implement because it cost him a lot when he was younger. In fact, Louis Braille was the son of a leather worker, and he came from a very small town in France. And the awl, AWL, is a very sharp instrument that's used in leather working and other trades. And when he was a little kid, he wanted to try to use it himself. And his dad is like, oh, okay, and he probably shouldn't have done this. But the little boy, a little Louis, his hand slipped, and the awl actually pierced one of his eyes. And the wound was so bad that he eventually went totally blind in that eye. And so he himself was visually impaired, and he was also gifted academically, gifted musically. He studied at a school called the Royal Institution for Blind Youth in Paris. And this is really how he came up with the idea of creating Braille, because at the time, blind people and visually impaired people had to use this other system. It was really clunky. It was not efficient. And when he was only 12 years old, Louis Braille said, hey, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way. So he started by working off of an alphabet that was originally intended for the military. It was kind of like this Morse code type of language that the military was going to use in France, but they never wound up using it because it was just too complex. So he kind of started off with that, and then he broke it down and he made it simpler and simpler and simpler. And this is what we have to do too. We have to communicate well. We have to communicate like Joe Davis was saying, that great advice he got from Joe Buck. Don't try to cram, 60 pounds into a 30-pound bag. Make it simple. Break it down. And that's what Louis Braille did when he created the language that is now named after him called Braille. And so he used an awl, that same instrument that caused his blindness years ago, in order to forge the original French alphabet for Braille. Now, when he finally published it, readers reported, wow, people who are visually impaired, they said this is way better, way faster than the old methods, what we had before. And so he went on, of course, to graduate from that institute, and he wound up teaching there himself for many, many years. He taught math and history to blind students at the institute. He also created kind of musical notes in Braille, added some musical notes to his alphabet so visually impaired persons could read music now. He also added math notations to Braille. So just an incredible contribution to the world. And unfortunately, he died very, very young. He developed TB, tuberculosis, which was so rampant at the time, in his 20s. And he died at the age of 43. But here's what he said just before he died. He told a friend of his, God was pleased to hold before my eyes the dazzling splendors of eternal hope. After that, doesn't it seem that nothing more could keep me bound to the earth? God had given him kind of a vision of eternity, and so he was happy to go home into the arms of his Father God. How about that? Louis Braille, the inventor of Braille, also a very, very devout Catholic. Going to go to the phones right now. Mary is calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Well, you inspired me with your introduction, and happy anniversary 2 years.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, 38 years ago, I had like an oh God experience in my Toyota van. Mm. And it was like I had won the do-it-yourself sitcom search on MTV for having a crazy life.
Oh,
and
really?
It was a true story.
Huh.
And I said, oh, thank you, God, for letting me, I'm going to be on the Will Schreiner show, and I've been on ABC and CBS, and everybody knows me at the gas station. Thank you, thank you. And then all of a sudden, it was like touched by an angel, and all the light, my whole car was filled with light. And he says, you think I gave you that little contest so you could get on national TV and talk about housework? I said, who are you, God? And he says, I'd like to be called the Lord. And I'm like, oh, great. He likes to make jokes, too. And he says, those bozos in Washington, who happen to be Gorbachev and Reagan, are not getting anywhere. You've got to help them. And I said, me? I'm nobody. I'm a housewife. Yeah, I won a contest, but who's going to help world peace? Me? And he says, I like you. So for 38 years, I have been trying to help world peace. And here I am on radio TV, on radio, telling you, God picks weird people. I mean, strange, unlikely. And I never gave up. I mean, I wrote a story about it. I wrote letters to the editor. I wrote screenplay. I do artwork. I have T-shirt companies. I write to people I think that might help me in the White House. And nobody seems to be wanting to hear that I should warn the world about nuclear annihilation. So I said it on the radio.
Yeah. Mary, so I'm really sorry to jump in there. We're up against the clock here. We're almost out of time. But I wanted to just thank you for calling in. And one of the things that you're pointing out, obviously, is that it's never too late. God puts a call on our lives sometimes to do certain things. And You say that you had an experience with him in the car, and it was like touched by an angel light all around. And believe it or not, the touched by an angel lady was on the show once, Roma Downey. We had a chat that was really great. And hey, you know, there's when you think about big macro issues like world peace, and unfortunately the prospect of nuclear annihilation didn't go away in the 80s. It's still a live possibility now, unfortunately, especially with recent geopolitical events. We hope it doesn't ever come to that, but we all do need to pray for peace, absolutely, and to offer a lot of sacrifices for an end to the conflict in Ukraine. And just peace. Our Lady Queen of Peace can help us with that so often. And so we've got to pray a lot of rosaries. The Divine Mercy Chaplet is also a great weapon as well. And we do that every day on Relevant Radio during the Drew Mariani Show at 3 p.m. Central. And that's the hour of Divine Mercy. And it's certainly been a great mercy for me and a great grace to be able to be with you guys here on the Cale Clark Show. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to all of you who have listened over the past couple years and made the show what it is. It's really your show. I'm just here for you. And I hope that we have many, many more years together. It's been an absolute slice. It's been a ball. Really want to thank producer Jim Shaper for manning the control board today. Patrick Alok took your phone calls. And guys, you know, Jim, now you're kind of new to the team here, but I'm looking forward to the next couple of years with you as my producer. And producer Lucas had texted me earlier today and said, hey, it's the anniversary, and reminded me of that. And I'm really looking forward to working with you in the future. And I hope you're having fun working with me so far.
It's been a blast.
Yep. And that's all. That's all. You'll tell me what you really think later on.
It's been a lot of fun. And Lucas has done a great job. And, you know, it's always fun keeping in contact with him as well. So, no, I can't be happier being with you on the show.
Well, he still listens to the show, so that's a good sign that, you know, we didn't completely turn him off. And anyways, well, God bless you, Lucas, and look forward to talking to all of you tomorrow on the Cale Clark Show. Timory is up next. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.